Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and thanks for joining me today. You know, everyone's journey to reclaim sacred feminine wisdom is different, but based on conversations that I've had with lots of women and a few men on this topic, I do think there are certain aspects of that journey that are shared by many. And one of those aspects, or lessons, rather, is around the sacredness of the body. There are a lot of spiritual teachings out there that urge us to reject the body and the material world in general in favor of pursuing spiritual enlightenment that transcends the earth and our human containers. Some religious traditions have even taught that to be born of a female body, which, hello, is all of us, is a sin in and of itself. But the sacred feminine has instructed me instead that she is right here, inside this human body that I've been gifted with in this lifetime. So if I really want to know and honor the sacred feminine, I need to be fully embodied and embrace the body as sacred too. And for me, yoga has been a particularly powerful practice for establishing a sacred relationship with my body. Another wonderful thing that's happened along my path to the sacred feminine, and I've heard similar stories from other people too, is this sweet organic awareness of the moon and her rhythms. Culturally, we spend most of our time fixated on the sun and its power, yet we can forget that the moon has her own quiet power. She controls the tides and the movement of water and so many of our subtle human rhythms too. Well, lucky for us, my guest today is here to talk to us about both of these things. The power of yoga to connect us deeply to our own sense of the sacred within our bodies, and how we can practice in harmony with the rhythms of the moon. Dr. Laura Cornell is the founder of Divine Feminine Yoga and the author of the new book, Moon Salutations, Women's Journey Through Yoga to Healing, Power, and Peace. Through Divine Feminine Yoga, Laura has directed several online conferences empowering women through yoga, and she also provides coaching, retreats, online courses, and leadership training for women worldwide. In her book, Laura tells a story of how she discovered yoga's transformative power to reconnect her with her feminine being and bring her home to wholeness. Laura holds a master's degree in East-West psychology and a doctorate in religion and philosophy. And she's also a certified 500-hour Kripalu yoga teacher and integrative yoga therapist. And she is joining us today from her current home in Mexico. Laura, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Liz. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Oh, wonderful. So I love to start with guests usually by asking them a little bit of their origins, kind of how you got to where you are. And so I know from reading your book and your background that yoga has really been, it seems like a lifelong journey for you. And I'm wondering if you, well, you can answer first of all if that's correct, but I'm wondering if you can walk us through a little bit about how you found the path to yoga, or rather how yoga found you.
Absolutely. It's been about 30 years that I've been practicing yoga, which is not my whole lifetime. I was in my late 20s when I found yoga, and I was actually very sick, which is what took me to yoga. In my 20s, I struggled with anxiety and depression and eating disorder and then chronic fatigue. And I was sick for a couple of years, and it was actually the blessing of a fall at work. I was teaching elementary school, and I fell.
Oh, wow.
On my back. I fell back in a storeroom over a box that was on the floor and landed flat on my back. And I ended up in a chiropractor's office who said, "You have chronic fatigue," which I had not identified, which meant that if there was something going on, maybe I could get better, but also said, "You need to come to yoga." And she was teaching, and the next day I was in her yoga class on a Thursday night. And it was awkward. My body was not familiar with the stretches. I felt a little odd and weird, but lo and behold, the next day, Friday evening, I had energy. and I could go out dancing, which I hadn't been able to do in years. I just had to stay at home on the weekends because I was so exhausted from the week.
Wow.
And so there was a pretty complete, fast beginning of a turnaround of my immune system, my energy system. And over the next couple of years, yoga completely rebuilt my immune health, my emotional health, and was just massively transformative in my life. I've been practicing ever since.
Wow. And in terms of your schooling, was your focus in religion and philosophy, were you focused specifically on yoga there? I mean, did it carry over into that area of your life as well?
Absolutely. So I did my yoga teacher training in 1995. And then I went back. I needed to earn money. So I went back and I taught another year of elementary school after I had spent a year living in yoga ashrams and places like that, and at the Kripalu Center and other yoga ashrams. And so I taught one more year of fourth grade, which was wonderful. And I was teaching three, it was my best year of teaching ever, because I was also teaching three yoga classes per week on top of fourth grade. And somehow that just really awoke the love within me. And we just had such a wonderful time with those kids. Mm-hmm. But another part of me was really longing to go deeper into yoga and to understand the philosophy. So I specifically went to a graduate school that had lots and lots of yoga philosophy, both yoga psychology that was in my psychology program, which was the master's degree, as well as feminist theology, feminist women's spirituality. And then in the for the doctorate, I was able to do quite a bit in Eastern philosophy, the Hindu goddess, the Bhagavad Gita, the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, other Indian philosophical traditions and spiritual and psychological traditions were all integrated into my studies. And so every course I was in, I would write my papers on yoga. If I was in a course on like women's spirituality, I would write some aspect of yoga for my paper. I always found a link there, always.
Mm, I love it. Well, and you kind of teed me up. I was going to ask you too about the divine feminine. And so we're going to talk about your book, and it's very geared towards the feminine experience of yoga, which I love. But I was curious if yoga is what introduced you to the idea of the divine feminine, or if you had had exposure earlier, or how that came into your life.
Oh, well, I was a feminist in high school, which was not very common. I actually volunteered for the Equal Rights Amendment, in Missouri, in St. Louis.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I went around door to door trying to get signatures. And I read feminist books in high school, as well as Mahatma Gandhi. And I think I read Betty Friedan about the feminist movement, Gloria Steinem, in high school. I struggled from a lot of problems that a lot of women and girls have. You know, I was smart, which was not cool, especially for a girl. You know, I was really good in math, and in middle school, that was just so uncool. And I saw in my family that, you know, the men were more comfortable, more respected, and not the women. We weren't supposed to be opinionated. We weren't supposed to have ideas. And I had quite a lot of both. And so I remember once having a conversation with my dad, actually, maybe I should say an argument about pacifism and why pacifism was a good thing and why we should be concerned about nuclear war. And my mother said to me later, if you keep talking like that, no man will ever want to marry you.
Oh, gosh.
So there was this really traditional sense of it's not okay to have a feminine idea. And the religion that I grew up in was very body denying. It had a lot of good things. I grew up a Christian Scientist. I knew, was surrounded by wonderful people. But you're not supposed to tune into your physical body or your emotional body. There's not a lot of mental health knowledge. And on top of that, I was molested as a child, which I write a little bit about. I do write about in the book. So, you know, all those things sort of conspire to give me a feminist consciousness. I don't know how else to say it. And after college, I had another incident 2 years after college of sexual assault by a stranger. And I was not raped, but I was able to end the situation where I could have been raped. And it was so traumatic. It was really traumatic. I was 20, 23, 24, you know, kind of a mess at that age. I think it's real, that's a hard age, 20s, I think, you know, when you've just gotten out of college, especially in our culture where we don't have strong connections between the generations. I wasn't that close to my parents. And so it was very traumatic, and I started going to a rape crisis center and volunteering there. I took all these empowerment courses. I took self-defense for women, and I learned how to shout no and poke somebody's eyes out and all the other wonderful violent things they teach you in those classes. And that was actually very strengthening. And then I started looking at, I started going to a Quaker meeting, and I started reading about, actually, there was a woman in the Quaker meeting who took me under her wing, who was this big, beautiful, boisterous, quite rotund woman who was a feminist. And she would take me to feminist circles and feminist spirituality gatherings. And I started reading about women's spirituality. And it dawned on me that the Judeo-Christian scriptures, well, the Christian, let's just go there. The prayer, Our Father, which art in heaven, that I didn't want to pray that again until I had Our Mother, which art in the earth. Now, you were telling me the other day about the rosary, and I love that. I want to hear that podcast.
Yeah.
But which has a feminine element to the beginning of it. I wasn't taught the rosary. You know, I wasn't taught anything feminine, so I didn't pray the Our Father year for about 2 decades while I reclaim my relationship with my body, with my mother. And yoga was a big part of that. Yoga was a big part of how I was able to heal my relationship with my body, with my emotions, healing from trauma. And yes, lots of good psychotherapy. But, you know, I think that only goes so far if you don't have the embodiment piece and the immune system piece, because sometimes psychotherapy can just be re-traumatizing if there's not a holistic somatic component to it. So I had the yoga, the somatic component to really integrate my emotions in my body. And then the women's circle. You know, at the very beginning, I learned the sun salutation, but then later somebody showed me the moon salutation, which is very feminine. And I began to practice that in circles and in workshops and then lead it and teach it once I became a teacher. And I still love it, which is why I wrote my book on the moon salutation. And through all of their, you know, just continue to awaken a relationship with Earth Mother, with my own body, and with the divine spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it's been something that's just kind of evolved for you over time and through lots of different ways, which is really beautiful. I'm wanting to ask you about whether or not you feel like it's hard to frame questions around the divine feminine for me sometimes because she's so big and she's so expansive that to try and, you know, contain her feels a little bit ridiculous. But I want to ask you about your relationship with her in regards to yoga specifically. And if your study of yoga and the philosophy of yoga has brought you in a particular relationship with her with regards to the Hindu goddesses of yoga, for example, or if you experience her as more of a broader, I hate the word thing, but that's what I'm going to say, broader presence in your life, I guess.
That's a great question. You know, academic study is one thing, and I'm extremely grateful for all my education. I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's given me so much. The biggest thing it's given me is perspective. But, you know, honestly, I think experience is more powerful than study. And so I think, yeah, I love studying about the Hindu goddess, and I had some wonderful teachers, both men and women. Eleanor Gayden being one, Jim Ryan being another, both authors, particularly Eleanor Gayden, who's been all over the world and written many books on the divine feminine. She has since passed to the other side.
Yeah.
You know, that was, I still have, you know, words, phrases and images that pass through my mind, like Devi Uvacha, the goddess spoke, you know, which is like that the goddess speaks to us in another language, which is not the language of words. And all those images of the Hindu gods and goddesses, where they have both the fearsome side and the gentle, pacific, peaceful side, like Kali being so ugly and, you know, with that beautiful tongue going down and the skulls around her and dancing and drinking blood. I mean, it shows us that our limited Western versions of the divine are limited, you know. It shows us how limited we are, and it helps us realize that wildness is part of who we are. Wildness is our divinity. But I think ultimately we have to come inside of ourselves and have an internal experience. It's not so much about studies or reading. Reading can expand our mind, but it's the meditation, it's the prayer, it's the being in nature, it's the being in the body where we come home. So I think for me now, my deepest spiritual experience is in my own meditation. And frankly, my teaching is my best source of creativity when I'm supporting my clients in accessing their creativity. Or, you know, I coach people, women on sacred business. And what is your mission in the world is when the Divine Mother speaks to me about what question I need to ask. And when I have my own writing journal and I journal on a daily basis, whatever inspiration comes to me in meditation. And recently it's been Mother Mary. So it's not like I'm not grateful for having studied about the Hindu goddesses, but Mother Mary is the one who sits with me when I'm meditating.
That's so beautiful. Well, and as you were talking, I was remembering, I had a little light bulb click on here about the Hindu goddesses. And one of the first experiences I had, a visual experience, I saw Kali in a meditation long before I knew who she was. I just saw this blue-skinned woman with a circle of things around her neck. And I went and Googled, and there she was. And I long wondered, why did Kali show up? It was shortly after I realized that there was such a thing as the divine feminine, but that's literally all I knew. I knew nothing else. So I didn't even know what that really meant. And, you know, I think you just named it. It is that it's a picture of what it means to be feminine that is so much more expansive and holistic than anything I ever got growing up in a Southern Baptist church, which we got like this much of Mary and that was it. I mean, you know, in the Protestant faith, Mary was barely present at all.
That's right.
I think that was a little light bulb for me too, of why I think many Western women, for lots of reasons, I think it's not just this, but perhaps that's one big one, why Western women are really drawn to the Hindu goddesses, and particularly a powerful figure like Kali, but the others as well, because we don't get that picture of the whole picture of what the sacred feminine can be from our tradition, sadly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned the moon salutations. So I'd love to talk to you about that. And I, you know, the bummer with the podcast is it's not a visual medium, right? So we can't show people. Although I can definitely put links in the show notes so people can go and check out your website and, you know, see the, I know there's, diagrams of the flow online and things like that too. But I was hoping you could walk us through a little bit of what the moon salutations actually are and, you know, what their origin was, how they came about.
Beautiful. So I would say, just in a short nutshell, it's a meditative experience of what works for a woman's body made into a series of postures. And, you know, it's interesting that the moon salutation was created in response to the sun salutation, which is not as old as people would think. The modern version is really 100 years old, maybe barely.
I loved learning this in your book, by the way. I was just really fascinated by some of this history, which I did not know.
Yeah. I mean, they'll say, oh, it's 500. There's not very little. There's like no evidence. There is evidence of sun prayers, just like there's evidence of moon prayers and moon ceremonies. There's evidence of sun prayers and sun mantras. Yes. And sun prostration, standing up and bowing to the sun. But you weren't even supposed, once they invented the sun salutation and started practicing it in the, it was a combination of some ancient postures and the sun pranams with some Western British gymnastics that came about in the palaces of India, where the wealthy were patrons of the arts. They were patrons of the British, you know, gymnastics, and they were training their sons to be very healthy and athletic. And so they put all these things together. But the sun salutation is probably the most well-known flow in yoga, and it's a forward bowing, you know, to the sun, and then step back into a lunge, a little push-up cobra pose, and then back to down dog, and then back up to standing. It's great. It's a warm-up, but it's too heating for women going into menopause. It can injure the baby or the mother when you're pregnant. It's not good to do deep forward bends like that, and you can't lay on your belly in cobra and all those other things. And it's really not the best poses for menstruation. For some women on their periods, they like to do vigorous exercise. Many, many women do much better with restorative poses, rest poses, gentle poses, and just, you know, 3 days off. You know, the traditional in India is, and in fact, not just India, but most traditional cultures, is women get to rest on their periods. You know, what a radical idea, where we are in our Western world, we just keep act like nothing's happening. Well, it's not true. Your body's expelling quite a bit of blood. There's menstrual contractions around the uterus. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so resting on those days is healthy. It balances the system. It makes you feel happy. You can be happier the rest of the month and have less cramps the next month than if you just push through. So anyway, a bunch of women, well, before the 1920s, women were not supposed to practice yoga. It was considered either indecent or just prohibited. They were supposed to be at home raising children and not out being sadhus, you know, wandering monks, and not practicing the poses. So when they started bringing it in, it was very radical in the 1920s for Yogendra, when he started to say, I'm going to teach yoga to all castes. Can you imagine? Not just the upper caste. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, people who have left their homes. I'm going to teach it to householders, people who are married, people who are living at home. Oh, and by the way, women, this was a big deal. And then later Krishnamacharya, not that much later, 10, 20 years later, invited Indra Devi to be his student, only after the king told him to, because he didn't want to. She had asked him several times. And then it was really a couple more decades before women were doing it very commonly, and then a couple more decades before it came to the U.S. So when, you know, by the 70s, 60s, 80s, all they were telling women was, oh, by the way, if you're pregnant, don't practice yoga. Oh, by the way, if you're bleeding, don't practice yoga. They didn't say, and that just didn't make sense to women. So these women who were living at the Kripalu Center, they said, no. Thank you. Our bodies want to do yoga when we're bleeding. It's just we need different poses. We need gentler poses. We need side bending. We need things that open the belly, that stretch the hips, you know, because we get a little bit of back pain, or we get this, or we get that. So what happened with the moon salutation, they came up with a series of poses that had all of the best poses. And I mean, now you would think it would be ridiculous to tell women to go away and not practice on their period. That would just be ridiculous. And there's been so many books written since the 1980s about yoga for women, you know, and it's like, no, here's poses to do when you're pregnant. Here's poses to do when you're bleeding. It just makes sense to us. 50, 20, that's only 40 years ago, mm-hmm. You know. And so in the late 80s, a group of women at the Kripalu Center created the moon salutation, and it was from all the best poses. It had a birthing pose in the middle. It had the best poses for menstruation. It was cooling and calming to the nervous system. And so all the poses that have the lunar aspect, we all have a solar and a lunar aspect, so it has all the poses that balance and bring in the yin. And one of the things I love about it is that because it's sideways, it goes sideways, right? The sun salutation is forward and back. This is sideways. So it opens up that sideways global feeling of open-mindedness, of play, and of eroticism, and of connection to the earth, because you're squatting, right? When you're giving birth or bleeding, it's very earthy. Your blood is coming out. Your baby's coming out. So you're connected to the earth in that squat. And it's almost like a Kali pose. And those poses are in there. And then because you're sideways, it opens you to relationship. You can do the moon salutation facing a partner, or you can do it in a circle. And we all know women's circles are so empowering. There's no hierarchy. There's no front and back. It's one circle. There's no teacher and leader. We're all, yes, I mean, sometimes we need a good teacher to show us how to do things safely and guide us and lead us in a direction. But there's also the sense of we are in this together, and we get so much from the circle and the sisterhood. And that's what the moon salutation invites us to.
There's so much of what you just said that I love. The circular aspect to me also speaks to that idea of, well, just like the moon, of cycles, right? Everything goes in this circular pattern, as opposed to thinking of time as a very straight and definitive line, like we've got a beginning and an end, and that's it. So I love that about it too. And the other thing that you wrote in your book that really struck me was you were talking about that squat pose, which I believe is like right in the center of the sequence. Mm-hmm. And what that is like for women to stand in that pose and not feel shame, because we are so often taught, close your legs, keep your legs crossed, right? There's all kinds of messages about that, about and why you need to do that. And so there's something very empowering, I think, about doing the opposite, right, and not finding anything dirty or shameful about that, but instead seeing it as a tremendous source of power.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of women have reported to me that opening their body in that way helps them to heal from sexual trauma. You do it in a circle of safety. You don't do it all at once. In fact, I even have a meditation in there about sexual trauma healing meditation in that chapter on healing from sexual trauma. It's such a common experience for women. Not all women, but a good percentage of women have experienced sexual trauma. And so the biggest thing that is taken from us is our sense of self-respect, you know, that the wholeness, the integrity of the chakras, I am worthy of respect and my body is good. All parts of my body are beautiful. And so relaxing the pelvic floor, relaxing that area of the body is so healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing I was thinking about as you were talking, I was thinking about sun salutations and in general, I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, but what I have seen in yoga is a real tendency towards the heating type of yoga. Just that's what people do. It's this more power yoga, which I think it here in the US, this is what we are comfortable with for lots of reasons, right? It's a workout. Like if you're going there and you're sweating, then you're getting a workout. And so then it's acceptable to do yoga. And I just wonder about the overemphasis on heating in general, like, or even the idea of doing that type of power yoga, for example, in the middle of summer just seems intuitively like a really bad idea. You've already got a lot of heat flowing through your body. Do you need that? So I can personally just see the benefits of the cooling for so many reasons for us, not just physiologically for us as women or energetically, but just culturally based on what we prioritize and not prioritize.
I think that's a really good point. And I think our whole culture is a fire culture. We want to be stronger. We want to be faster. We want to be more powerful. When do we get to the inside? You know, and look at the consequences. Our planet has been on fire. We'll see now where things go with this massive change. But we are out of balance.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So in thinking about the moon salutations, I just want to recap a little bit. So some of the benefits of doing this kind of practice, it's cooling for the body. It's something that women can do pretty much at all stages, pregnancy, menstruation, menopause.
Let me just say, if you're bleeding, if you're menstruating, you might want to do a restorative sequence if you're really tired or have horrific cramps. You know, but if you have the energy to do standing poses, this is really a great ideal sequence. And the same thing for menopause. I mean, if you're going through the eye of the needle of menopause, and menopause, just like bleeding, menstruation is really different for every woman. You know, I've talked to women who sailed through menopause with no symptoms. I've talked to women who went through menopause 10, 15 years later, they're still having massive hot flashes, still not sleeping at night. My personal journey was somewhere in the middle. You know, I had hot flashes for a few years and occasionally at night. And then the eye of the needle for me was like a couple of hot flashes at night and not sleeping and then waking up with panic attacks that I wasn't going to sleep. And I thought I was going crazy and then having this swinging of your emotions. So that was the worst for me. And at that time, I couldn't really do standing poses. I didn't have the energy. I needed restorative yoga for that worst moment, you know, which for me was just a couple of months till I was able to get some of my energy built back. But, you know, so it's when you're really exhausted, which can happen with horrific cramps that not all women get, but some women do, or, you know, I recommend restorative poses and resting and taking 3 days off significantly over, you know, painkillers, because they will last till your next period and you will be happier by taking those days off. Although if you need the painkillers, some women do them. I don't want to judge, but I'm just saying try taking 3 days off work or at least one, you know, in the worst day. Give yourself movies, tell your spouse to do all the cooking, to watch the kids, whatever it is. And my second spouse, I said, I'm having really bad cramps. He said, okay, I'll cook on those 3 days. And I just laid on the couch and he fed me and I watched extra movies. My cramps started to go away. It really made a difference. So, you know, if you can tell people, and it's normal to need to rest and do extra things to pamper yourself and have ritual. And anyway, that's, I really, really strongly believe that cultures where there is more of a tradition of women taking days off and living in communal households and taking over housework on those 3 days, they have fewer cramps. I think it makes, there's a thing there that goes together. But for those who do want to do standing poses, the moon salutation is the best sequence of pose to do when you're having hot flashes or when you're having, when you're bleeding. And it also is great for pregnancy. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that in some of the shapes of the poses too, you know, really, helping you to open up your body towards the end of pregnancy as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious if your experience with the moon salutations, you know, I think you've answered this a little bit physically, but otherwise has changed as you've been practicing them over however many years now that they've been a part of your life.
Well, I think I'd have to say that at the beginning, it was about female bonding and about learning the a sequence of poses I could do at different times. And then when I would teach the moon salutation for many years, it was about creating ritual. Mm. And I would lead retreats with women. And, you know, when you practice it together and you all learn it, there is this beautiful sense of ritual. And then poetry. In my book, there's also a beautiful poem that goes along with the moon salutation, and that's on our website. You can download that for free at moonsalutations.com. But I would have to say that then when I came back to the book, to writing it, which I had had a draft for 20 years before I finally finished it, it became more technical. It became more about what are all the different variations that I can offer to women who are, you know, having insomnia, or women who are in a wheelchair, or women, you know, so that, you know, and that's when I compiled 9 different variations. Not just the original one, which can be hard, you know, it's quite athletic. It can be hard if you have tight knees. So I, you know, I compile different variations for people who do have, you know, quirky knees or tight hips. And so then it became more like, wow, what are all the different, you know, more like about the creativity. And then it became more about global sisterhood. And I really began to think more about circles and what do circles mean for us as women. So now I'm teaching it an online series, and, I think my experience is less personal because, you know, it's 25 years since I learned the moon salutation. So it's less about ritual and more about how do I teach it to so many different women who have different needs.
Hmm. That's really interesting. I almost would have guessed it would have been the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it still is a way for me to mark the moon. Like I will always in my classes, when I'm teaching the moon salutation, I'll say, let's think about where we are. And many women and men forget where we are in the lunar cycle. So to me, an important part of our yoga is where's the moon? You know, like right now we're coming up to a new moon. And I know this is going to air on the new moon. And so today when I was teaching, I talked about the Kali moon. So what a new moon, and I like to connect with the real moon. So I will look at the moon in my life and I will feel how it's influencing my life. So right now with the Kali moon, it means you can only see the moon in the very early morning if you wake up before sunrise. And there's this crescent in the same direction as where the sun will rise. And each day she's getting smaller and smaller until for one day before the new moon, you don't see her. The day of the new moon, she's completely dark. And then the day after, you don't see her either. And then she rises, you know, then you can see her right after sunset. So it changes. And that feeling of darkness, that visualizing the Kali moon, wow, that it's been night, it's been dark all night. And now then, oh, there's this crescent moon over there. And the sun's about to rise, and then the moon's going to disappear into obscurity. But just seeing that crescent And then visualizing that crescent on your own forehead, right? Like, I am Kali. I am the darkness. I go through death. I go through regeneration. Things in my life die. You know, the planet goes through crises and we have to stay home or whatever the crises are. We get ill, that people die in our lives. And so I am Kali, and embodying that part of ourself that is about death and regeneration. And the Divine Mother, Ma, Kali is Ma. And so bringing that into my classes, I think, is really important.
I love that. I was also going to ask you about that. You know, if the moon salutations or your yoga practice in general changes during different phases of the moon, it seems like the answer would be yes.
I do like to do the moon salutation on the new moon and the full moon. So, you know, if I'm teaching a couple classes a week, the moon will only be new or full on one of those days, but I might name it energetically around that time. I think for a personal at-home practice, each woman needs to make her own practice based on her body's needs. And by going to class, we learn poses, we have a ritual experience, we have that meditative container. And right now I'm teaching online because everything's online right now. And it doesn't matter. Our meditation is amplified, you know, there's by being in the presence of others who are meditating at the same time. And so knowing we're also resonating with the energy of the moon, I think, is powerful and adds that extra ingredient. But then the live beings and feeling the support of whichever angels, guides, teachers want to be there with you while you're meditating and practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I found that for me, getting in touch with the rhythms of the moon, I think I said this in the intro, it's very sweet, but it's also it's subtle. You know, just like we were talking about with the sun salutations, they're very kind of in your face, they're forward, they're like, you know, opening you, really connecting with the moon.
Even the moon when it's full is 14% the brightness of the sun.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So that's full. And a lot of the time she's not full. That's only 1 out of 29 nights, you know, or maybe 3 out of 29 nights. So most of the time it's extremely subtle. As soon as the sun rises, the moon starts to disappear. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to find the moon. Where's the moon? You know, you have to really know where to look to see the moon, even if it's up. And so there is a way in which the sun just kind of hits us. You can't miss it. But the sun, you have to know where to look and you have to know when to look. You can miss the moon very easily. So if you want to see the new moon, you have to know to go right outside after sunset, like 2 or 3 or 4 days after sunset, and look, and then you'll see that beautiful crescent. But if you're not there watching the sunset or after sunset, you won't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Kali moon. If you don't know to wake up before sunrise and go look, you will not see her. You won't see the Kali moon, that crescent before the sunrise, at the end of the waning cycle. And so it is subtle. And, you know, a lot of times there's no moon obvious in the sky. It's there somewhere if you know where to look, or maybe it's below the horizon right then. It'll come up 12 hours later. So you have, if you're not really paying attention to her, you will miss it. You will definitely miss it.
Yeah, and that just feels like a really good metaphor, I think, in lots of ways for developing a really deep relationship with the sacred feminine too. You know, it's subtle and yet very powerful at the same time. So one thing that has been really present for me over the last couple of years, you know, Laura, I don't know if my listeners know or not, but I do teach yoga, and so I'm a certified yoga instructor, but something that's really been present for me and an interesting dichotomy, I guess, is that yoga really was a vehicle for me to get more fully into my body and to start to know my body as something sacred, not something that I'm going to reject, but to really listen to the rhythms of her. And yet there is this history of yoga not being accessible to women. And there is a personal history that I have of, you know, lineage of yoga. My very first yoga experience was a Bikram yoga class in Chicago. I know. She's grimacing here and I understand. Over 20 years ago in Chicago. And, if you don't know as a listener, there's some pretty horrible details connected to the founder of Bikram Yoga in terms of sexual assault, sexual harassment, misogyny, all kinds of awful things. I'm trained in Vinyasa Yoga, which is, you know, comes from Patabi Joyce, which there's also quite a lot of scandal connected to him. I've practiced Kundalini Yoga. My husband is a big fan of Kundalini Yoga. There's some really horrible details that have come out recently about the founder of that, Yogi Bhajan. And so there's this disconnect for me in some ways of like yoga has been this beautiful feminine practice. And yet there's this, I'm going to say anti-female aspect that I feel like I've encountered that is frustrating and feels kind of yucky. And I'm wondering how you have navigated that yourself mm-hmm. in your own yoga practice and your own yoga teachings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I showed up at the Kripalu Center 1 year after they had asked their guru to leave.
Mm.
They are the only American yoga institute that I know of. I don't think there's any other who said to their guru, we're going to carry on without you. The board said you have to leave after some allegations that had been made for decades were finally discovered by the board to be true, even though the guru had denied them when they were first made 2 decades earlier. So, or no, maybe 15. Yeah. Oh, there was some they had come out. Some had come out in 72 and then some in the 80s. And then it was in 94 when Amrit Desai was asked to leave the Kripalu Center. And it's really interesting because I have some clients who continue to study with him. mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, for me personally, I was very glad to be participating in a tradition that had acknowledged what had happened, that had admitted it, that had been as open as they could. I mean, stories, you know, more information is still coming out. They were perhaps not as open as they could, but they really tried to be as open as they could, and was moving on. And I went to yoga teacher training with two women. And we talked with them quite a bit about how they felt about the scandal and the ashram almost falling apart and becoming bankrupt as people just said, the whole place exploded, imploded, both. And what they said to me that made a lot of sense was that the teachings and the practice were more than the person. All of us have failings. I have failings. I founded Green Yoga Association, which was a wonderful nonprofit. And I hadn't faced my money stuff yet. And we went bankrupt while I was the director. That was extremely painful. But it set me on a healing path of my relationship to money. And that was in 2007. And I'm really grateful. I would not wish that experience of going bankrupt and, you know, feeling publicly humiliated or whatever else happened, but I had a lot to learn about money. And I'm so grateful for what I've learned about it and the abundance that has come into my life as a result and how I've been able to help other yoga teachers with that stuff, because I think it's something that a lot of spiritual people, men and women, have. My husband and I both went through, I met him about that time that everything was unraveling with the finances of that beautiful association. And we studied money together and it's made a massive difference in our lives. It's why we're now able to live in Mexico and be financially free, and really because we care about, we learn to take, be respectful of money and business, which is something I didn't know how to do at that point. So the reason I say that is I say even leaders, people who do good things, have failures. And unfortunately, our entire culture is saturated with unhealthy relationships between men and women, sometimes between men and men, women and women. There can also be sexual abuse, sexual violence in gay and, you know, gay and lesbian relationships, but it's showing up mostly between, you know, in heterosexual relationships, and particularly in terms of male gurus, and not all Indian, but sometimes even American or Western gurus with women. It's not like these people are any worse than the rest of the people in our culture. It's women participate in it just as much as men. I'm not trying to blame the victims. I'm trying to say, as a culture, like, my mother didn't know how to protect me from my uncle or my father. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not blaming my mother. I love my mother, and we did a ton of healing in our relationship. But I'm saying that as a culture, we haven't grown out of that yet. And so it's showing up everywhere. It shows up in churches. It shows up in government. It shows up in entertainment. You know, famous people are no less susceptible to their foibles and failures of our culture than unfamous people. And so the leaders are no less susceptible. And so it's why I think we need transparency. And I will say that in finishing my book, which is about women's empowerment and women's healing, and there's a chapter on healing from sexual trauma, I was like, I better look into this scandal at Kripalu, which is my own lineage and where the, and so I went back and I interviewed a number of women that had created the Moon Citation, two of whom were living at Kripalu when everything broke loose and two of whom were not, but all of whom had been there when the abuses happened. And they had four very different perspectives. It was amazing to hear how different their perspectives were, but in total, it was extremely disturbing. And a couple of them had heard straight from the women who had been the worst raped. Very disturbing. And then I went and I read a book called by Dana Faulds, F-A-U-L-D-S, her memoir, not her amazing poetry, which I love, but her memoir. And that really helped me put all the pieces and understand how what one woman said, which seems so different, how that both of those could exist at the same time. You know, it's like touching different pieces of the elephant. So I really came away believing that something pretty wonderful had happened to Kripalu with the experiences people had with Amrit being so elevated and amazing, and then also pretty awful had happened in secret, based on what, you know, very direct evidence and stories. And that's just incredibly disturbing. But given my own personal experience with a really wonderful father who is still alive and who knows, may hear this podcast someday, whatever, knows that I wrote about it in my book. And I just try to be as open as I can. And it is part of our culture. And men are wounded just as much as women are wounded. They wouldn't be injuring other people if they weren't wounded. And so we are wounded as a culture. And the more we can talk about it, and it's hard to talk about it because you get blamed. And, you know, it took a lot of courage for me to put that in my book. And I think any woman who talks about her experiences is extremely courageous and deserves to be listened to.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective. And it seems to me the key is to your point, if we were to throw out everything that's been tainted by, you know, patriarchal BS and toxic masculinity, we probably wouldn't have a lot left, period. And I'm talking historically, you know, if we're looking back for thousands of years. I think what's always felt important to me is that we are able to have the kind of conversation and kind of lay out what you just did, you know, that we don't deny, or we don't do the thing where we're like, well, she wasn't enlightened enough, so she didn't get what he was trying to do with her, which I've seen as an explanation recently for Yogi Bhajan, for example, in the Kundalini lineage. So we don't do that. We don't blame. We don't reject outright. But we challenge ourselves to hold the contradiction, I guess, of both. You know, this is a thing, a practice that's been super beneficial in my life, and this aspect of it is really ugly. And
also a teacher who may have changed many, many people's lives for the better and may still be changing people's lives for the better, but caused harm to other people.
Yeah. I'm also remembering something that I read in Andrew Harvey's book, Return of the Mother, when he was talking about, this was more generally about relationships with gurus, but he was reflecting on the idea that if your focus is in his case, he's talking about the mother, you know, the connection with the divine mother. If your focus is her and your devotion is her, then lots of spiritual teachers can get you there. They can get you closer to her. And once you start relying on that particular teacher too much, she will pull the rug out from under you to remind you that it's not the teacher, it's her. And I always thought that was a really beautiful reflection, kind of helped me make more sense of how, you know, for example, because Bikram yoga was a wonderful thing for the first couple of years that I practiced yoga, it got me into yoga. It totally changed things for me. So I can have respect for that practice, I guess, for that.
It is sad. And I just want to say it is disappointing that so many gurus that we look up to, men leaders of traditions that we respect, have been accused, and we can't really know who has really done injury. But honestly, whenever I get very, very close to a situation and I'm able to talk to the person who either was themselves abused, raped, or somebody who actually heard from them directly, most of the stories are very believable, which is really sad.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess this is one thing that I really like about just in reading your book about the moon salutation too, and the fact that, you know, the creators of it, they didn't invent the asanas, right? But they certainly put the sequence together with a feminine mindset in mind, and feminine body, feminine experience. So, you know, just in, as I've been reflecting about yoga and, you know, finding the sacred feminine in it, that felt like a path to it, you know, like, this is a way to practice that feels in alignment with where I'm at now.
I think, you know, the body, being tuning into our body, especially as women, there's no way it can't be a feminine experience. If I'm in a feminine body, if I'm being authentic. And I think there have always been women yoginis. Mm-hmm. But yes, all traditions worldwide, it's a historical phenomenon. All traditions worldwide have suppressed genuine feminine liberation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I like that reflection. You're in a feminine body, that it's going to be a feminine experience. That feels simply and elegantly true. I like that. Well, this has been a beautiful conversation, Laura. I don't want to keep you all day. This has been beautiful, though. I thank you so much for joining me today. And if so, Laura's book, Moon Salutations, Women's Journey Through Yoga to Healing, Power, and Peace. And then, Laura, if people want to learn more about you, where should they go? What should they do?
DivineFeminineYoga.com. Or moonsalutations.com. There's some free gifts on the page. As you said, you can download the postures. You can download an audio. There's different variations of the postures, audio to go with that. And then the book has like 10 different variations, poem, meditation that goes with it. And then divinefeminineyoga.com. And I am teaching online now, so.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. And I love the book. I have lots and lots of parts of it highlighted. So it's a wonderful read. And I'll put links to Laura's sites that she mentioned here in the show notes too, so you guys can find them. So Laura, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Liz.
Yeah. And thank you guys for joining me too. And as always, if you like this show, do me a favor and give us a 5-star review on iTunes or tell your friends about it. You can do both of those things if you like. And till next time, we'll talk to you again soon. Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com. where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.